help me welcome our speaker tonight, Chris from the Program of Action Group.
This one's hot. Leave it in, nice and cold.
That's good stuff.
Is it?
That there for later. Hi, my name is Chris Nelly. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, what's up? Man, this is awkward. I'm actually nervous. I have this the first meeting I've spoke at in person in over a year and a half, and it's like only the fifth in-person meeting I've been to in a year and a half. So I'm actually like nervous. It's weird. I hate Zoom meetings. I just hate them. I like being around people and talking to people and connecting with people, and the Zoom meetings just suck, man. They really do. That's, you know, for me. I did a couple of talks on Zoom meeting. One was for like a recovery house, and I'm on the phone, and on every screen it was just the ceiling fan. In the living room, the phone was just sitting on the table, and I'm just talking to like six ceiling fans. And I'm like, my God, like this sucks, man. And I don't even want to, like, who wants to be on a Zoom meeting listening to just someone talk for a half hour, 45 minutes? And then I'm, like, just basically talking to myself for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you know what I mean? I say the big gotcha jokes and nobody laughs. I'm like, damn, this sucks, man. This is a tough crowd, man. I'm so glad that getting back into meetings, you know, like, in person. So anyway, yeah, like I said, I'm nervous, so I have no idea where this is going to go. Haven't spoken in a while, so, you know, so glad this is getting recorded. people want to listen to it after this, I don't know why. So my name is Chris Natalini. I'm originally from West Philadelphia, if anybody's familiar. Overbrook section, 64th and Calla Hill. I don't know if anybody's ever been down that area. It's like 25 minutes out of like Center City. And, you know, a rough little Italian section. Where I grew up, little triangle area that we had, and it was a great little neighborhood to grow up in. I had great friends, loved my family at the time, my brother, my sister, you know, wasn't really close with my mom and dad, nothing like that. I don't know if that has anything to do with me being an alcoholic. I'm sure that's up for debate. But I just remember growing up, you know, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, just a kid, like, just feeling, like, out of place. You know, I would always try and fit in, and I just would always end up sticking out like a sore thumb. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And all this stuff, none of this stuff was experienced, like, I didn't realize any of this at the time. This was all stuff that I've learned once I got here. Like, I've grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've become a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, everything that has happened in my life has been from being here. All of my experiences from looking back and being able to see the truth and what happened and all this stuff has come from being here. But anyway, you know, in a neighborhood, not feeling like I fit in anywhere, just want to fit in, want to be friendly, want people to like me. So a buddy of mine, Louie, was like, yo, you want to get a 40? And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to get a 40. I don't even know what that is. But I want a 40. I mean, I want to be a part of, yes. And so how does a 13-year-old little kid get a 40? We pay some crackhead $5. And tip them like $2 to get us our stuff, you know. And it's funny how I make fun of these people at the time. And what I grew into a few years later, that wasn't the plan. You know what I mean? I never thought that taking a couple little drinks at 13 would get me to where I was at 24. You know, and I have kids today that I share this stuff with. You know what I mean? Because since there's no cure for alcoholism, the only thing I can do is educate. Educate. It's just like cancer, right? You can't cure cancer, so what do? We tell you to eat healthy, don't smoke, try and, you know, whatever. So we try and give you all the education we can. This is what causes it, this is what happens, stay out of the sun, put on sunscreen, blah, 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 blah. So it's just the same type of mindset I take with my kids, is just give them all the information I possibly can, you know, because I have 5 kids and 2 potential alcoholics. You know what I mean? I don't think I'm going to get away scot-free, but it's possible. You know what I mean? They're definitely not like me. They're like a little nerdy, a little dorky. I love it. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of smart. My daughter's a little crazy one. But I try and get them the information from this experience I had at 13 and when it started. but just this fun and excitement of taking a few drinks. You know what I mean? And then it went to every weekend, drinking every weekend. You know, I was only 13, so I couldn't get it every day, but I would get it every weekend. And my mom was the cool mom, and she would buy us, you know, cases of Old English Pounders and everything like that. And, you know, we'd go into the woods, into the golf course, Cobbs Creek Golf Course, and just drink. And it was great. There was no problems, no trouble, no worries. And then everything started to feel like I was a part of, you know, like I was a part of the in crowd. And, you know, also from this early age, I remember always being in fear. I was always afraid, but I would never let anybody know I was afraid. I was looked at as like the crazy kid, right? Because I wanted to make people afraid of me before they found out what I thought about myself. I didn't want anybody to know what I thought about myself, right? So what I would do is I would try to intimidate. I would try and fight people. This is 13, 14, 15. I would always fight all day long, every day. Like every day I would try and start a fight with somebody. Just a total scared little kid. But if you saw me, you would think, man, this kid ain't afraid of nothing. He's not afraid of anything. But I really was just, I was terrified. And but I put on this persona of not being scared of anything. And so this is from 13 to 16 every weekend. As soon as I turned 16, I drank every single day. Every day that I possibly could, you know. If I can get my hands on it, I was drinking. I got my license at 16. I was like the cool kid because I was a spoiled little brat. My parents got me a car, and they gave me their old car. And like I had these dreams of like, man, once I get a car, we're going to travel. We're going to go everywhere. We're going to do all these things. We're going to have a lot of fun. And all I did was just drive around my neighborhood in circles. I never even left my neighborhood. We would just drive like from 63rd Street up to 68th Street, 67th Street, back down, and then we would go up the hill and just drive around up the hill and then go back down. And that's all I did every day, all day. Just drive around drinking. No amazing things or anything. I just always had a 40 by my side and, you know, I was told I'm not going to get murdered if I talk about drugs. It's a huge part of my story. They say if you want to, what do they say? If you want to upset a newcomer, talk about God. And if you want to upset an old timer, talk about drugs. Right? So, drugs is a big part of my story. I think drugs got me here maybe 20 or 30 years quicker than alcohol may have, even though I drank every single day, from 16 to 24. I think drugs kind of gave me the accelerated course to get here. So I'm actually grateful for that. I'm not mad at drugs. I'm not mad at alcohol. I'm not mad at bars. I'm not mad at drug dealers. I'm not mad at any of that stuff. You know what I mean? Those are our allies in here. Without bars and drug dealers, we don't have any newcomers to help. So it's kind of like our allies. You know what I mean? I don't see them as like as these bad people who are destroying the world. I had this path that I was on, and it got me here, and it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I couldn't imagine going any other way. So I'm actually grateful for it. But yeah, so drinking every day, blah, 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 accelerated course, getting to 21. From 16 to 21 is when I started getting real heavy into drugs, pills, all this other stuff. And I started to realize this was becoming a problem. I started to realize like, well, I think this is getting out of hand. And I tried stopping when I was 21, and that's when I first realized like, oh wow, I can't. And I would get sick. And I'm like, oh, if I just keep drinking a little bit, I don't get sick anymore. So, you know, I'm pretty smart, right? So if I get sick when I stop, then don't stop. Just start again. And that was my story from 21 to 24 where I didn't think I was going to do the things I did. I started selling drugs at 16, early age, all that stuff, doing all that. And I didn't think it was going to get to where it got by the time I was 24. And so I would always pride myself on, like, you know, not going to rehab. All my friends were going in and out of rehab. And I'd never been to rehab. Never been there. And so I would be like, yeah, I'm not as bad as these guys. You know what I mean? Like, my friends are going. And they would come out, and then they would drink again or get high, and I'm like, shh, dude, what are you doing, man? What's the matter with you? Like, what? You just got out of rehab. Meanwhile, I'm drinking, I'm throwing pills back, and I'm like criticizing them on what they're doing. But that's how I was able to separate myself from, like, oh, I'm not that bad. And even to the point where I was homeless at the end, and I was living at the golf course, well, I'm not really homeless because I was living in my car. You know, any piece of dignity I can hang on to, that at least I'm not as bad as these people. But I just remember that when I tried to stop and I would go back and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I didn't understand what was wrong with me. And my dad would say, just be a man. Just put it down. What's the matter with you? Just stop. Just be a man. I put it down when I was 26. Just put it down. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to put it down. I'm going to be a man, you know, I'm going to man up. I'm going to put this stuff down. I'm not going to touch it again. And I went to like martial arts and I started training and I'm doing like kickboxing. And I'm like, let somebody ask me when to drink again. I'll knock them out. And then, you know, my buddy was like, yo, Chris, I got them things, you know, 3 for $20. I'll give you one free. And I'm like, I'll be right there. And I don't understand, like, what the hell, what happened? I thought that I wasn't man enough. I thought that I wasn't strong enough. I didn't understand. Now I realize I'm not man enough to handle my problems. I'm okay with that today, which makes most of my problems easy to handle and deal with. But at the time, I thought that I wasn't man enough to handle my problems. You know, I don't want to fast forward too quick, but it's funny, when I met my sponsor, he's like, you think you're so tough, you were defeated by a liquid. And I'm like, damn. You know, I didn't understand what was wrong with me. It was really frustrating, you know, because I'm a strong-willed person. Like, if I put my mind to something, I do it. If I put my mind to something, I stick to it and I do it. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't put my mind to quitting drinking and quitting getting high. And I keep trying, and I'm going to do it again. And I would, like, keep trying to do it and to figure out how I'm going to man up and I'm going to will myself and I'm not going to do it. And then I would do it again, over and over and over again. And it was, you know, for every 3 months, I would go back out, get all messed up, not want to do it anymore, go to my mom and dad. I go, I don't want to do this anymore. I can't live this way anymore. It sucks. And we would go to Dr. Guberman in New Jersey, and he would cut my arm open, and he would stick a pellet implant in my arm, and it would block all opiates. And in my mind, that's good. Because in my mind, that was my problem. And I'm drinking every day like no one's business. Because I didn't think alcohol was my problem. I didn't think alcohol was a problem. You know? And then this pellet would wear off, and then I'd go back out. And I did that every 2-3 months for 3 years. Every 2-3 months. Getting sick. Withdrawal. Detoxing. Going in my parents' basement. Throwing up. My dad sticking needles in my butt. You know, to help me with the withdrawals and all that. And I'd get the 7 days, I'd get the pellet, I'd go get the pellet, and then I'd go out drinking that night. You know, and then drink until the pellet wore off. And I did that for 3 years. Every 3 months. And when I got here and I had to look at things honestly, if you call my parents' basement a rehab, I've been in and out of rehab like 30 times. Because I would go in the basement, kick, withdraw, get out, go drink, come back, like over and over and over again. And it was frustrating. And I really thought I was a goner. I just thought, like, I'm going to be like my aunts. I'm going to be like all my uncles. I'm just going to end up dying like my Aunt Susie, you know, and or my Uncle Albert. And that's just going to be the way. That's it. I kept trying everything I could think of to stop. I didn't try everything, but I tried everything I could think of. I tried a new girlfriend. I tried a new job. I tried moving to a different state, county or city, right? I tried more jobs. I tried making more money. I tried hanging out with different people. I tried religious tattoos. I thought maybe that'll help. I tried walking around with a pocket Bible. I tried everything like I could think of, and I just kept failing. I just kept failing. And when I got here and started reading the book, I was like, I thought somebody put you guys up to it. I'm like, did my mom tell you to like write all this stuff in there and tell me about all this, because it was just like everything that I tried, like all the faulty emotional appeal stuff, like everything was just like over and over, everything that I tried to do but couldn't stop. And it was finally towards the end, there was this guy, Jason Tibbetts, and I always share about him because he's, you know, he's the reason I'm here today. And it was this guy I was selling massive amounts of cocaine to, and he shows up and he's in my parents' basement and he's so, because we were working together, I should say I was working for my father, doing masonry, concrete, stuck, all this stuff. And this guy was working with us for a year, and I'm, you know, his dealer. And my parents had enough finally. They kicked me out. They're like, that's enough. We're sick of you. We're done with you. They finally had enough. Threw me out. I moved to the golf course. It was in January. It was cold. And I went back home in my parents' basement to get some clothes because I was basically freezing to death. And he shows up and he's in my basement. And he's full of life. You know, like he just had the experience, right? Like he met up with his sponsor again. He went through the steps. He's like full of life. He's like shining from ear to ear, you know, big smile. He's a good looking guy. He's handsome. He's back in shape. You know, he's working out. And, he was from Boston. He's like, yo, bro, why don't you come to these recovery houses in Levittown? I'm like, what the hell is a recovery house? You know, like he's like, oh, it's, you know, we go to AA and we go to meetings and everything. And I'm like, what is AA? He's like, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I never even heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, this is my first time coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? It doesn't make me better than anybody. I always thought like, when I had like 6 months to a year, I was like, I think I need to like relapse, like make my story more, you know, relatable. You know, like I think I just gotta get high or drink again and then come back. Maybe it'll even feel better. Like I'll be better at this. But, you know, like, but it doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody. I'm just letting you know, like, if you're new, it's possible. It's possible. Right? He's like, yeah, you know, you come to these recovery houses, blah, blah, blah. They tell you what to do. You go to meetings, all this good stuff. And I'm like, look, man, whatever. This was one of those periods where I was trying to stop again. And he caught me with like the window. There was just like a little crack left. You know what I mean? A little crack in the window of willingness that I had. Maybe I'll do this. This is the first time I actually had that willingness. And then someone who like knew what to do showed me like a plan of action, like a design for living that works. Something that I never had before. I never had the two. It was always like, I'm just going to stop. Willpower. Willpower, willpower, willpower. And so I go, I get the pellet in my arm. This was January 7th, 2005. Right? Have not had a drink or a drug since. I can't say mind or mood altering substance because I think Facebook is a mind and mood altering substance. I've been hooked on that for a little bit. Yeah, recently got off. I've been sober for like 8 months, but then I relapsed. I've been on for like 2 months now. It's terrible. But yeah, so I do believe it's a mind mood altering substance. But yeah, so like he brought me out to these recovery houses and I was just like beat. I was in a state, beat to a state of reasonableness. I had no ideas. I had no plans on getting sober. I had no, like, this is what I'm going to do this time. I always had a, this is what I'm going to do this time. I had no, this is what I'm going to do this time. I didn't think this was going to work. I didn't think I had a chance. So we move out to Levittown, we do the deal, we go to meetings, he reads a big book to me, a paragraph at a time, he breaks it down to me, because he's been in and out a few times before. And his, you know, his Achilles heel was like getting in shape and girls. And he just breaking it down to me, reading it to me over and over and over and over again. He could be my sponsor because we lived in the same houses. So I got a sponsor out there, like the third meeting I went to. And we started going through the steps. It was pretty quick. I think the total amount of time I spent with my sponsor was like 2.5 hours over the course of, 56 days or something like that, 58 days. And we would meet up, go through the steps, 1 through 4 in an hour. I wrote the 4th step. We met up like 3 weeks later, did 5 through 9 in an hour. And then we sat in his car outside of a meeting for like 30 minutes and did steps 10, 11, and 12. You know, it was pretty quick. I don't do it that way. today, but that's how I went through it. And Jay and me were like working together and talking and going to all these meetings. And he would yell at me because I would throw a gum wrapper out the window. He's like, yo, bro, why you want to ruin the dirty of the planet? You know, we're trying to make change. And I'm like, dude, back to, you know, like, I've been sober 3 weeks, man. Relax. I'm not trying to change in 3 weeks everything. Relax. You know, and I'm like screaming at him. And now I can't throw out a toothpick without thinking, well, it's wood and, it'll disintegrate, blah, 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 blah. You know, or like a apple peel or a seed or whatever. Like, I'm okay with that kind of stuff, but like, my truck looks like a trash can. You know, I clean it out every Friday. But, I love him for that. But he, took me through all this stuff. Everything I have today is because of this guy, right? This guy, Jason Tibbetts, took the time to bring me to you guys, introduced me to a sponsor. My sponsor introduced me to God, and all this stuff that I've gotten in these past 16 and a half years was from a guy who had less than 3 weeks of sobriety. He was only sober for like 3 weeks when he came in my parents' basement. You know, so it's very important for me to always share that just so the newcomer hears, like, you know, how powerful this stuff is, you know. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to stick and stay. He wasn't able to keep doing the work. And 2 months after that, 3 months after that, he ended up relapsing. And then like 2 years later, he was dead. You know? So it's like bittersweet. You know, it's an amazing thing that he did this. And if he just stuck around and kept doing what they told him to do, maybe he'd be here today. But I'm forever, eternally grateful to him. I love him to death. You know, I always have to just share that so that I remember, you know, what he did for me. So this story with my sponsor, when he was speaking at the front of a meeting, he was like doing this big book break. He's a crazy guy. I'm sure he probably spoke here, Chris B or Chris Brennan. I don't know if you guys, it's on, whatever, bleep that out. Sorry, broke his anonymity. I don't know if people are really like picky about that. But yeah, he's like at the front of the meeting and he's like going over the big book and he's like yelling and he's like, you know, blah, 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 blah. He's talking about being in control and give me the keys, I'll drive, that type of stuff. And he said something that hit me because I was always struggling with this, with the willpower. I didn't understand what the hell was wrong with me. I thought I wasn't man enough. And he said that he talked about how when Bill went to see Dr. Silkworth, he talked about how the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating alcohol, even though it remains strong in other areas of my life. So even though I'm a strong-willed person, and anything I put my mind to, I can do it, my willpower is going to be amazingly weakened when it comes to combating alcohol. And he says the reason is that is because the willpower only works if you see something wrong with what you're about to do. And at certain times, my mind doesn't see anything wrong with taking a drink. My mind doesn't remember what it does to me. It remembers what it does for me. It remembers the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once when I take a few drinks. You know, my second sponsor said to me, he would always talk about how alcohol, the Latin root of the word alcohol is spiritus. And the definition of spiritus is breath. So when I take a drink, it's like I can breathe. Sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once. And that was the first person I ever heard say that it wasn't a matter of willpower and being a man, and it's not because you're a sinner or because you don't believe enough or because of this and that. It's because the will is amazingly weakened. And it affects me differently than the majority of people. And of course, I went up and I asked him to be my sponsor. You know, I was like, hey, can you help me? Because I didn't know what to do. I was just like told to get a sponsor. And the funny thing is, after a few weeks with him, he's like, I like you that you don't know anything about AA. He's like, I don't have to deprogram you of all the stuff you learn in here. He's like, I can just get you right going. Because I started going to meetings, and then I start, like, I would say the word drugs. And some meetings, they'd be like, don't talk about that here, blah, blah, this alcohol, blah, 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 blah. And what the hell do I know? It's the first time I'd never been to AA before. I didn't know. Okay. So you need to go to another fellowship. So I started going to another fellowship. And I go to the meetings and I'm sharing and I'm talking about the steps and blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh yeah, well, they tell me, well, you can't actually be here if you have an AA sponsor. I was like, oh, damn, I can't go to AA, I can't go to NA. Like, where the hell do I go? Where do I go? You know, like, what do I do? I didn't even know that alcohol was a problem for me. Luckily, I had a sponsor who was, like, equipped with some knowledge and knew some facts. And he said, I drank for a long time and I never wanted to. And he said, I did drugs for a long time and I never wanted to drink. But I never drank without wanting to do drugs. He's like, what's my problem? I was like, drinking? He's like, no, it's your thinking. Your thinking is the problem. It has nothing to do with drugs or alcohol. I haven't had a problem with drugs and alcohol in a long time. My thinking, oh my God, my thinking, it's out to kill me still. You know what I mean? I have some tools today, but it still wants me miserable and depressed and lonely and poor me and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? I always say that, like, you know, when I was drinking, the majority of my problems were real. And now that I've been sober some time, most of my problems are fancied. Like, fancy to real, they have the power to actually kill. Like, I make up all these problems. Like, my life is great, right? Like, I have a great life. I'm very grateful for the life that I have today. But in my head, you would think like I'm like living at the top of the golf course. Miserable, you know? And that's what I've been working on, especially through this past year and a half. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, if I didn't have a foundation laid in the first couple months of like steps, sponsorship, working with others, getting to God, praying, meditating, staying in the center, doing all this stuff, like, I get why a lot of people go out. You know, I don't know how the hell I haven't gone out. I don't think I'm still immune to it. You know? I was just playing golf with a couple friends, and we're trying to figure out, you know, because now when you got time, you try to start figuring this stuff out. You know? And, man, like, what the hell? How am I still here? How am I still here? You know, I've done the not praying. I've done the not sponsoring guys. I've done the not going to meetings. I've done the, you know, stuck with selfishness. I've done all that. Like, how am I still here? And the only thing we can come up with is, like, I conceded to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic. To my innermost self. Not what I tell you guys, not what I share in meetings, not what how I, you know, anything else where I go, like, to thine own self be true, like, to my innermost self, I never want to drink or get high again. Like, I can cry thinking about it. Like, I don't ever want to do it again. And if anything, I think it's the only thing that has gotten me over all of the humps and all of the pain to get me back to doing this work. Because it's the only thing that works. This is the only thing that gets me out of all that. But thank God I had this path laid out in front of me and showed me this design for living that works. You know? And it was by going through these steps and seeing these experiences and admitting to myself this first step and being willing to believe in something greater than me. I didn't believe in God when I got here. You know, something happened to me when I was 8 by a very close family member who made me do something sexually with another close family member. And I was in Catholic school and I said, where the hell is God at? He ain't around. So I'll see you later, God. And anybody who tried to talk to me about God, I would fight with him. Like screaming, don't tell me what you know about your God. Blah, blah, blah. And my sponsor was like, look, I'm a human power. I'm never going to try to prove to you the existence of God. He says, I can't do that. He said, if you have an open mind and an open heart, God will prove himself to you. That's God's job. And what I found from that moment was my first prayer was, I don't know who you are, I don't know what you are, but if you are, help me. And that's how it all started for me. A simple little prayer. I learned the third step. I don't get hung up on the words. It even says in the big book, the wording is, of course, optional. So I don't get so like hell-bent on like the words anymore like I used to. I used to be a big book thumper to the core, which is great. I think it's important to become militant in AA for a little bit. You know, it makes it fun and exciting. You know, you're not doing your job if you're not getting bashed at a bunch of meetings in the beginning. But I was told that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you go through them as outlined in the big book, you will become militant. But if you stay militant, you need to experience 12 steps is outlined in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a whole new world of freedom in that book that I never saw before. One with the wording is, of course, optional. And we do much of this in our spare time. Where was that at when I was knocking people's heads out, you know, over with the book? We do much of this in our spare time. Huh? You know? Like, no, I don't think so. And I would, like, not let anybody have their opinions or their views in AA. And then it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. You want to see that other people's views and opinions are what's great and what's helpful. And I love alcoholics, man. The good ones and the bad ones. I love the alcoholics who don't do the steps, who do the steps, the sponsor guys, who don't sponsor guys, who pray, who don't pray. I love them all, man. It's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous fun. You know, there is a path. There is a program of action. But look, wherever you're at, you know, I don't want to like preach from the mountaintop, but wherever you're at, it's where you're at, man. You know, what I just know for me, what I had to do is, when I get to that point of misery, miserable depression, curled up in a fetal position in my bedroom, of am I going to go and say, F it, or am I going to come back here for some reason? I've always turned back here, and it keeps getting better. That's the truth. It keeps getting better. But yeah, so going through that stuff, I'm all over the place. Sorry, it's been a while. You know what I mean? I told you, I gave you the warning in the beginning. But so I started to have this open mind, started to try this stuff. I don't think I have long-term sobriety without the stuff I learned in the fifth step. You know, it was the first time in my life where I actually could see that the problem was me and of my own making. And it was in the fifth step when I started to realize, like, I think this might work. It was the first time I started feeling different. Like, I was just in the middle of the day crying, like, for no reason. I just cry, or I'd be happy, you know, or I just, like, I asked my friend, like, when does this all end? You know, I was always afraid, like, when does this stop? And he said, never. It never does. You know, nobody ever told, well, people did say you're on a pink cloud, but luckily I had some knowledge of the book. When Bill Wilson told Dr. Silkworth about his experience, Dr. Silkworth was like, Bill was like, am I going nuts? He's like, look, whatever it is, hang on to it. It's far better than you were before. So whatever it is, hang on to it. And I found that the pink cloud is God's grace. And we're all in it. We're all in God's grace. Some are awakened to it, some are still asleep, but we're all in it. We're all in God's grace. And so I started having this feeling in the fifth step, like I think something might be different. I started to see that if I can keep the finger pointed at me, some things will be different. Even in the hard ones. And I had a difficult relationship with my father from 16 to 24. I went to work with him, and it was always screaming and hollering and yelling and screaming and hollering and yelling. And nothing was ever good enough. Nothing was ever fast enough. It was always hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And I had a huge resentment to that. My mom is my mom. You know, she hasn't called me in 16 years. You know what I mean? Like, if I don't call her, there is no relationship. And I found today how to be okay with that and okay with the relationship that this is as good as it's going to get. But I had to get there from a lot of this work. I couldn't get to this point in the beginning. I still had to make some amends and clean some stuff up. But it was in that fifth step where I started to realize, like, okay, I think this is different. I think something here is different. And then going out to these people is where I started to, that little willingness to believe and like the second step started to be different in the amends process. When I started to go to the close family member who hurt me when I was 8 and I forgave them and didn't even let them know why. I just wanted them to know, like, I forgive you, I love you, and I don't hold anything against you. And if they call me today, I'll be there for them. I don't call them and I don't go after a relationship. But if they call me and need help, I'll be there for them, right? I went and made amends to my dad, and I was able to do a lot of cool things. He'll never take money, so I was able to fill up his gas tank, you know what I mean, take his car, invite him and my mom out to dinner and pay for it. Or we have, I own a masonry company, we have the same account. Well, I have an account, he has an account at the same company, and they would send me bills by accident, and I would just pay it. He don't even know I do that, right? So that was the way that I made a financial amends back to him. But all these cool things. Like with my mom, I was able to sign for her to get a car because I destroyed her credit because I got my car repossessed, was in her name. There's all these cool little things, man. There's an answer to every problem. A way to get through all of it. But just being able to have that and praying before I would go and do it. And I call my sponsor up and I'm like, a little girl gets her communion, the communion, my cousin's daughter's communion, and my whole mom's side of the family was there. And my sponsor's real big on these things like Christmas and Thanksgiving. He's like, you can knock out like 20 amens in one night. Like you just go around each little person. So I'm like, all right, Chris, what do I do? All right, go to your aunt, say blah, 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 blah. I went through like a little game plan. This is what I want to say, blah, blah, blah. Went to her. Done. Go back out. All right, I did that. What do I do now, Chris? Go to your uncle. All right, I did that. Go to your grandma. All right, come back out. Go to your cousin. I did like 15 amends at this communion. And then I got like just excited about it. I'm starting to think, because it felt so good. It really sounds crazy, but like just admitting my faults and like cleaning up all this stuff, because I can't live a day at a time. I'm carrying the last 20 years of my life over my shoulder. It felt so good just like cleaning up the wreckage of my past. I'm going through like, all right, who did I miss? Who else can I go make amends to, man? Like, I want to go to everybody. Like, do I owe you an amends? I don't know. Like, I just want to go make amends to people. It was like feeling, there was such a transformation. It was feeling so good. Luckily, I didn't have any bad experiences. Nobody, you know, shut the door on me or kicked me out of their office. You know, I got the, you know, we just want you to do good. And we want you to keep doing what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. Which Chris was always like, you know, you get more out of the people who tell you to go F yourself. You know, you learn more about patience and tolerance and kindness and love and forgiveness. But I didn't get any of those. And so we did that. And I didn't really pay much attention to steps 10, 11, and 12 in the beginning. Because my ass was on fire. Right? So yeah, I did it, and I went through this test with them, and I'm living this stuff on a daily basis, and I started sponsoring guys right away, and I'm sponsoring, like my ass was on fire, and I was on fire, and like, you know, everything was falling down, and I just kept wanting to work, and I started getting more into prayer and meditation after like a couple of years, but like in the beginning, I was just go. And he told me that I need to, like, after we got through the 12 steps of the garden, now you got to carry the message. I'm like, oh, I can't help anybody. You know, who am I? How can I, there's no one, I can't do any, like, who am I? How can I help someone? And he's like, yeah, just go do it. And I get this first guy out of recovery house and I sit down with him and I explain everything I possibly could explain to somebody in the first three steps. I think we sat down for like 3 hours. And I explained like everything, right? Because like, I don't care if I mess this stuff up, but I want to show you perfectly how you do it. And then we're all going to mess it up. But I don't want to show you wrong. I want to show you perfectly how to do this stuff. I mess it up all the time, blah, blah, blah. So I'm showing him all the details. And he went out that night and he relapsed and he OD'd. And he almost died. And I go back to my sponsor, like, Chris, I can't do this. I mean, like, I can't help anybody. There's no way I can help anybody. I can't sponsor people. I don't even have 3 months yet. And he's like, you don't have the power to get anybody sober. He's like, you don't have the power to get anybody drunk or high. He's like, you don't have that kind of power. He's like, all you got to do is sit down with them and put in the effort and read to them. He's like, even Bill failed his first couple of tries. He's like, it's okay if you kill a couple of your first couple of tries. I was like, what? You know, people aren't getting drunk or high because the steps are going through them too fast or too slow. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on that is making me think that alcohol is a good idea. Right? The whole purpose of the steps is to get me to a state where I'm not so restless, irritable, and discontented. Because when I get restless, irritable, and discontented, a drink starts to look like a good idea. And I didn't have any of those experiences where, like, once I got here, I haven't thought about, there was two times, right? But I haven't thought about a drug or alcohol like it's a good idea since I got here, right? I remember 55 days, I think it was, I just got through the steps, and I was coming home from Delaware County, and I was going through North Philly. And I was like, man, I could get off this train right here and nobody would know. And I was like, oh my God. It was like a weight on my chest. It was like, they lied to me. I was like, they said if I do this stuff, I won't think about it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, wait, what can I do? And I'm like, okay, I had a big book with me. And I opened up the big book and I started reading how it works. And in like 10 minutes, that feeling was gone. And it was the first time I had the thought and I didn't do it. And I was like, whoa, something's different. Something's different here. And so it made me want to do this more. And I don't know how much you get to fail. I failed miserably in my first year. I did everything you could possibly do wrong in the first year. Everything. I was still stealing from Wawa when I had like money in my pocket. You know what I mean? Like, I'm stealing and I'm like, what am I doing? I have money in my pocket. You know, I was still being the scumbag guy that like sleeping around with all the girls. You know what I mean? I was still lying. I was saying that I was going to meetings when I wasn't. I was checking off my chore when I really wasn't doing it. Like little stuff, but it was big stuff at the time, you know? I don't know how I made it through the first year. I have no idea. I didn't do anything my sponsor told me to do. For some reason, I'm not a wise man. A wise man learns from other people's mistakes. For some reason, I have to learn by pain and misery and frustration and blah, 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 like over and over and over again. But through all of that, through all of the mistakes, I was constantly I wanted to do this stuff. I wanted to get better at working at this stuff. And I met a girl, it's the story, right? Like, it was a job, car, and a girl, the Holy Trinity. Everybody's going to be sober forever if I get that. And we got together, didn't work out. We break up. 2 weeks later, calls me, tells me she's pregnant.
Okay.
Get back together, try to make it work. Doesn't work. Separate. She has our son. Try to get back together. Doesn't work. Break up. 5 months later, I get the call. Hey, I want to have lunch. Okay. I'm pregnant. That's great. That's awesome. Good for you. He's like, oh, it's yours. You're 5 months pregnant. I didn't know.
Whoa.
And the ultrasound's tomorrow. And so we go to the ultrasound and they're like, do you want to know the sex? We're like, sure. They're like, it's a boy. Okay, great. And it's another boy. Oh my God. Like having twins. So 11 months after my son Gavin was born, Christopher and Anthony were born. So 3 kids in 1 year. And I'm trying to work this program and I'm in a relationship and I didn't listen to anybody, you know, what they were telling me to do. Tried to get back, it didn't work, and then we were together for like 4 years, but like 6 months together. You know what I mean? Over 4 years. And it was the relationship that I grew up in. I'm screaming and hollering, punching holes in the wall, flipping furniture. And I'm like this spiritual AA guy, like, you know, Chris Natalini. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sponsoring AF Levittown, man. Like, you asked me to speak at your meeting, and like, I'm speaking, right? And I'm like, whoa, this guy's all about God and steps and sponsorship. And then I go home and I'm screaming and hollering and punching holes in the wall and blah, 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 blah. And I couldn't apply this stuff in that area. And then it got so bad to the end where finally some crazy stuff happened, a lie or whatever. I go home, I grab my son, I'm in the bedroom, I shut and lock the door, and she starts breaking the door down with a screwdriver. Unlocks it, comes in, screaming, hollering. I put my son down, she grabs him, won't let me leave. She finally puts him down. I throw her on the bed, I grab a pillow, and I always share this, if you could kill somebody with a pillow, it's how I was swinging this pillow to death. And, you know, she was terrified, the cops came, she told them what happened, I said everything she said happened. This is 5 years sober. And I end up going to jail that night. And then I get out, and I do what every good AA does, I go back and I make amends immediately. I don't discuss it with anybody. I just go and I'm going to fix this. And I apologize, make the amends, say what I did wrong. But she's like, yeah, you know, I'm like, we just shouldn't be together. I agree. I go to a meeting that night. I go back to my parents and there's police there. And I went to jail again, 5 years sober, 2 nights in jail, back to back. And I learned a valuable lesson with that. The valuable lesson was don't live with any secrets. I have no secrets. There are 5 people in my life who know every single thing that I have ever done, think about, or think about doing. I don't live alone anymore. That was the most valuable lesson I got from that. Most of my lessons were from pain, and the greatest things that ever happened in my life have come from pain and being wrong and making mistakes, unfortunately, but that's just the way I learned. Where I'm at today is not because I want to be some spiritual, kind, loving, considerate guru. I want to be all those things because I have experienced the pain of not being those things. I was going to anger management, and one of the requirements of court was that I have to stay in anger management. And they told me I was one of the first clients that got court ordered to anger management while already in anger management. And which makes me like super sick, I guess. But I learned to not live alone with secrets. And I ended up staying there for a year. And out of that, I ended up meeting my girlfriend, who is now my wife, who is the love of my life, the greatest person I've ever met, like truly good heart, good person, not manipulative, nothing. She is straight up, man. And she has never seen that guy a couple times. Right? In the beginning, I would throw a lamp or break some furniture, and then I'd have to go into anger management and tell them what I did. And then they all sit around you and they tell you how you were wrong, and you have to just sit there and take it. And it saved my life because I was a maniac, screaming, hollering. That's all I knew. On the concrete job, screaming at the truck driver all day long. That's all I knew. And I was able to clean that up, and I was able to not continue that stuff. And I haven't been like that in 10 years. But the relationship I have with my wife is the greatest thing that I think Alcoholics Anonymous has ever given me. We just spent our 10-year wedding anniversary in Hawaii, and she got me this cool anniversary gift where she got a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and she had it. She sent it off to someone, and they folded all the pages into the date that we got married, 5/14/11, and a cute little writing on the outside of it saying, you know, this book and this program is interwoven in our relationship and in our life, and blah blah blah, and it's truly amazing that. That's what's been able to come out of the chaos, right? So, like, I got this amazing life, but it had to get as bad as it did for me to take some steps, to take some action. And that kind of area of my life had to get as bad as it did for me to have the relationship that I have with my wife today, you know, where she's my best friend. We talk about everything. We talk, like, we still text each other. I got her name tattooed on my arm, like, a month ago, like a 16-year-old little kid, and I got Mickey and Minnie. With little Magic Kingdom castle there with Disney font, you know what I mean? So you know we're serious Disney fanatics. She got my name tattooed on her back like Mickey and Minnie. It's like it's insane, you know what I mean? It's like the stuff you see in movies, but it's actually real. And we have two children together. We have a daughter, I have an 8-year-old, she'll be 9, Kaylee, and a 3-year-old son, Nicholas. I have 5 kids, right? So if you're not calm and patient with 5 kids, you forget about it. You're going to lose your mind. But when I get to work this program in my family, in my relationship, with my wife, at work, I own a masonry company. We actually just bought, my partner of mine bought a couple houses up in the Poconos. We rent them out like VRBO. I do, every Monday I meet with a sponsee. I go to one meeting a week. I'm on the phone every day with a sponsee. Praying and meditating and stuff I'm doing now. There's this thing called two-way prayer. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but if you go like on just Google two-way prayer, it'll come up and it talks you how to talk to like gives you some ideas, shows how to like talk to God and how to meditate and listen. And I'm able to do that with my wife and my kids. And you know, they've never seen, it's crazy to think about, but my kids never seen me drunk. You know what I mean? And if I was drinking, they would be in the back seat with me. Like, I don't think I'm better than anybody in that way. I know they would be in the back seat with me going wherever I was going. But what I found with this time and in the past year and a half is, like, a lot of my problems are fancy, right? Like, if I'm not doing something to redirect my negative thinking, right, it comes back. It always comes back. And I found it's okay, but there's a way out of it. And so what I've been sticking to recently has been a lot of prayer meditation. A lot of prayer meditation. And for me, it's the only thing that has been working. Right? Because I've had experiences where I thought like I got so far away from God, where I was so close and connected, And my therapist would say, it's impossible. You can't get far away from God. Everywhere you go, He's there. And I started thinking, well, I think I had to go to church and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, if God wanted you there, He would have brought you to the church preaching to the choir. God brought you here. You know, God wants you here helping His kids. And so a lot of lately has been prayer and meditation, every morning especially, where I have a constant forget, like a built-in forget, right? You hear it all the time. There's like a slow leak. It's like a tire with a slow leak. No matter how filled up I get every day, it just slowly leaks, and then I wake up like the world's falling, right? The world's falling. I'm not going to have enough money. How am I going to take care of all these kids? And fear has been a big part of my life like it was when I was a kid again. And I started to realize, like, if I don't get back into this prayer meditation, get outside of my own thinking, eventually I'm going to get restless here. I'm discontented. And you figure, like, well, why do guys go out 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, 20, 30 years, whatever? I can only imagine that if I just keep letting that slow leak without filling it back up every day, that thought's going to come in again. And so I've been every morning, just 15, 20 minutes in the morning, just laying quietly in my bed, headphones in, listening to meditation, right? And Dr. Bob in the Good Old Timers, it talks about in a two-way prayer. He said, you know, meetings weren't necessarily, they didn't view meetings necessarily back then as that important. Like they only had like one a week. And what they said, the most important thing to them back then was quiet time and morning meditation, quiet time in the morning and prayer. They found that that was the most important thing to them, the hour, the quiet hour in the morning. Like just calm down. Slow, there's nowhere to go. It's a long time. We're going to be alive a long. I got sober at 24. I'm going to be 41. Like, there's nowhere to go. I just need to slow down, relax. I'm where I'm supposed to be. Everything already is okay. And if I don't do that meditation in the morning, I can't think like that. And when I do stick with it, there is nothing that can happen that can affect me. Nothing. When I'm in that zone and I'm daily praying, meditating, and I'm doing it on a regular basis, it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter. I've had death. I had everything. You're going to experience a lot of pain in sobriety, right? You're going to experience a lot of pain. My sponsor always said, pain is mandatory, suffering is optional, right? You're going to experience a lot of pain. And the way to quiet that, I wish I did this more early on, is to do the meditation in the morning. Meet God first. I mean, it tells you in the 11th step. You know what I mean? It tells you exactly what to do. There's like directions on exactly what to do, but I'm going to try and figure out self-will run riot. But that is where I'm at now with quieting the mind and getting present with people. You know, I try to stick to when I share, just talking to the newcomer. You know what I mean? Talking to the newcomer. I've had experiences where I tried to like have the most powerful message in Alcoholics Anonymous, kill the hour speaker. I kind of got like, no offense, but I kind of got like way drained it out with like hour-long speaker meetings. You know, I enjoy them, but it's just, I did it for like 6 years every week. It was just a lot. Where I'm trying to say the most powerful message and I forget who my audience is. It's the newcomer. I can tell you all these amazing things and all these God moments and blah, blah, blah. But everybody in here has to have their own experience. Their own experience. Right? Like, I was trying to have the big book thumper experience. I was trying to have the, you know, do the steps or die experience. I was trying to have the, well, I don't even read that big book experience. I was trying to have my sponsor's experience. I had to find out how to have my own experience. And what I found is the most important thing for me is just to talk to the newcomer, share to them, you know, a little bit about some hope, about some where I've been, where I'm at now. And hopefully get them excited to come back to another Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So that's my time, sweating to death up here. Hope you got something out of it. That's all I got.